Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam. I'd like to take a moment to thank you for tuning in to my show. On today's episode of Burying It All with Call Me Adam, I am bringing back Mary Lane Haskell, whom I just spoke with a few weeks ago. But because we ran out of time in our last interview, I needed to have her back on the show so we can talk about her body positivity advocacy work, as well as starring in Dolly Parton's upcoming Christmas movie, Christmas on the Square, which will be premiering on Netflix on November 22nd. Hi, Mary Lane.
Hi, Adam.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? I'm so happy to be back.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to have you back. So, by the time this episode airs, your first interview will have already aired. So, in the last interview, just to remind everybody, we spoke with Mary Lane about Dolly Parton being her aunt and all the things they got to do, love to do growing up together. And we also talked about Mary Lane being a stroke survivor. But what we didn't get to talk about is on Mary Lane's social media, she does all of this body positivity advocacy. And we're going to talk about that. But first, let's start things off fun and light again. And we'll talk about your starring in Dolly's new Christmas movie, Christmas on the Square, which is coming to Netflix. Mm-hmm. So what can you tell us about the film and your role in the film?
Well, it's a musical, first thing first.
Which
is very appropriate for your audience, I think. It is a big, old-fashioned Hollywood musical. Dolly has written 14 new songs, one of which she gave a little preview on her Christmas album that just dropped.
Uh-huh.
The title song from the musical Christmas on the Square.
Uh-huh, yes.
The others are 13 songs that no one has heard before.
Oh my gosh.
And we're very excited about it. It's all of your favorite Christmas tropes. We've got a little Christmas carol. We've got a little It's a Wonderful Life. And then, of course, with music by Dolly Parton and directed by the incredible Debbie Allen.
Oh, my gosh.
And choreographed by Debbie Allen. So you know there's going to be incredible dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And just pure joy. I mean, it was pure joy for us to make. So that's what we hope people take from it as well.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you actually worked with Debbie Allen as well prior to the movie.
Yes. Well, I'm actually on her faculty at the Debbie Allen Dance Academy. I'm one of her musical theater masters. So I teach a history of musical theater class in which I kind of impress upon these students that it's so important to know the history of musical theater so that we know where Hamilton came from. You know, everyone's obsessed with Hamilton, but we got to know we got to go back to Music Man and Meredith Wilson. We've got to go back to all of that to understand, and Stephen Sondheim and Into the Woods to understand where rap on the Broadway stage actually came from. So, so that's what I do for her. And so through that have been very close with her. And so getting to work with her as an actor was incredibly special.
Yeah, how was that relationship? How was it different working with her as an actress as opposed to being a member of her faculty?
Well, gosh, I mean, I think it's because as artists, we're always artists, mm-hmm. whether we're acting or teaching, no matter what, there's always that artistry there.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think it was a slightly more collaborative experience to work with her as an actor in a project.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to more, you know, submitting my curriculum and getting curriculum approved. And if she had notes and if she wanted me to focus on certain things and kind of following her lead in that regard as a teacher at her academy, I think as an actor in a film, there was a lot more play that we got.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now, who do you play in the film?
Yes. Okay. So quick, too long, didn't read. Summation of what the story is. Small town in middle America, It's called Fullerville. And several days before Christmas, the mean Scrooge of the town, played by the incomparable Christine Baranski, decides that she has too many bad memories in this town and she wants to sell it. She wants to sell the town to a Walmart type conglomeration.
Okay.
And basically the opening number is she is serving eviction notices to the entire town. So who I play is Jenna, who is the wife of the town pastor, Christian, played by Josh Segarra.
Oh, I love it.
I know. He's just the best. And so the pastor, Pastor Christian, because we love an on-the-nose.
Yes.
An on-the-nose character name. Pastor Christian leads the resistance against Regina to try and save Christmas and to save the town of Fullerville. And so as his wife, I support him in that. I am a sounding board. I'm also, you know, a calming force for the town while everyone else has their pitchforks and torches ready to resist Regina. I'm kind of the calming voice. And so it was nice to be able to play that.
That's so exciting. And I love that you get to work with Josh so much because I've seen him in several Broadway shows. I saw him in Lestrada Jones.
Yes.
I saw him in On Your Feet as Emilio Estefan. Have you met him prior to this movie?
Okay, this is actually a funny story.
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying,
we went to the same college. He was a senior at NYU in the Tisch School of the Arts.
And
I was a freshman.
Oh my gosh.
And he was big man on campus. Everyone at Tisch knew who Josh Segarra was. I mean, he was so talented, is so talented. But to be a senior in college and be so incredibly talented. And he was in the a cappella group, the Enharmonics, that we would all go and see at their concerts. And so he was a bit of like a rock star to us freshmen. And so on the very first day, which was our recording session, he walks in straight off the plane and he's so nice, gives me the biggest hug. And he goes, "You're a fellow NYU grad." And I said, "Yes, I am." He goes, I looked you up. I did my research. And I said, "Great. I didn't have to do my research. You would have no reason to know who I am, but I know who you are."
Yes.
And just got to kind of do a freshman girl fangirl for a minute with him because I was such a fan and never had met him, but just knew, of course, who he was.
Yes. Oh, how wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And now after working with him, I mean, what sort of like, how do you view him now that you've worked with him as opposed to like, he's this, you know, Greek god on campus?
He is the kindest, most humble, most generous, hardest worker, so dedicated to his craft. I learned so much from him. He was so patient with me. And because, you know, between his role on Arrow, on the CW, and Orange is the New Black, and the other two on Comedy Central, like, I mean, he's as much a veteran of the television world as he is the Broadway world. And so just watching him work and working with him, you know, every time you have a different scene partner, mm-hmm. who has a different way of approaching the work than you do, mm-hmm. you learn something because yes. you come into it with your preconceived notions of this is how I want to play the scene or this is how I want to approach it. And then to have a scene partner who goes, actually, let's talk about it this way. Let's look at it this way. Is such a learning experience. And so for me to have such a seasoned actor in both the musical theater and the television world for this television musical was such a blessing.
Yes, yes. Now, I do want to make reference to our previous interview because during that interview, you had mentioned that one of the results of the side effects of your stroke was that you have lost the ability to sing.
Yes.
So when did you film this? Did you film this prior to your yeah. stroke? Oh.
Gratefully.
Wow.
This was filmed actually over a year ago. It was filmed in the summer of 2019.
Oh, wow.
So we wrapped at the beginning of July 2019. Mm-hmm. And so we always like to laugh that it's been just long enough to forget that we did it. So that when the time comes around to promote it, it still feels very fresh and exciting.
Yes, yes.
But we wrapped filming a few months before my stroke.
Wow.
So what I've been holding on to is that, you know, and again, remaining hopeful. And mm-hmm. as I mentioned the last time we spoke, I have a team of voice specialists in Los Angeles who I'm ready to work with mm-hmm. and start getting my tone back, as it were.
Yes.
But should I not? Mm-hmm. The fact that my last professional singing job was a Hollywood musical with Dolly Parton. I mean, that's a pretty great way to go out.
Yes, yes. That is very special. Yes, yes. Well, I'm so excited to see this film.
Yes.
I cannot wait. I mean, I know Jennifer Lewis is in it, who yes. I absolutely adore. Of course, Dolly's in it. I'm just so excited for another new Dolly Parton Christmas movie. And November 22nd on Netflix, it's going to be Christmas on the Square.
Yes. So excited.
So excited. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about your body positivity advocacy, because it is so important, this work that you do, and I want everybody to know about it. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Mary Lane Haskell.
Hey, y'all. My name is Mary Lane Haskell, and you're listening to Bearing It All with Call Me Adam.
And now we're back. So, like I mentioned before we went to break, you do a lot of body positivity advocacy work on your social media, especially your Instagram, yeah. where you are empowering plus size women to love themselves. And you have your Super Size the Look, where you put a picture of you dressed in the same clothes as somebody else,
yeah.
you know, usually a celebrity,
size or thinner celebrity. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, how did you come to like start this series on Instagram, and how did you come to just accept yourself and love yourself? And
well, we'll start with the series. I can't take credit for it. I wish I could, but I was very much inspired by an influencer and entrepreneur named Katie Storino, mm-hmm. who I follow on Instagram. She had a blog that then grew into sort of branding, and now she has a corporation called Mega Babe, where she makes, organic, humane products, whether it be deodorants or things that just really address the issues that women face, like mm-hmm. whether it's thigh chafing or boob sweat, you know, these things mm-hmm. that we used to not want to talk about, because admitting that we experienced them, I think oftentimes, especially plus size women, we thought there was something wrong with it. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, if I had a thigh gap, I wouldn't have thigh chafe. Mm-hmm. If I were super thin and my boobs were perky, I wouldn't have boob sweat. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to admit that there's something wrong, quote, wrong. Because I mean, gosh, a decade ago, that was the narrative. But Katie has done such an incredible job changing that narrative and being like, no, all women, no matter your body, experience these things.
Yeah.
And so I'm such a huge fan of hers. And Supersize the Look is actually her creation.
Okay.
And so when I was, you know, when I came to Mississippi for quarantine and I was, you know, looking at my big closet of clothes, because of course I didn't pack. Like, oh gosh, we all thought back in March, we thought it'll be 2 weeks.
Right, right.
You know? And so I packed a couple of pairs of leggings and a couple t-shirts and was like, I'm just going to have a little vacay. I was not prepared for it to be, gosh, almost 7 months later. So
yes.
I was going through my closet here in my parents' house to see what clothes I had. And as something to kind of keep me active and to keep me engaged, I started looking and saying, okay, so what outfits can I recreate? Like, how can I supersize the look? And so that's why I started back in March. And I'm so glad that you've enjoyed those posts, because I've certainly enjoyed making them. But I think just as a segue, such a big part of my body positivity journey and accepting myself in this body has been realizing that style has no size. When I was in high school, you know, I went to high school in Los Angeles, Calabasas, California, which is, as I like to call it, Kardashian country. So, you know, it's very much all about the look, all about what you're wearing, what designers you're wearing, all of that. And for me, you know, even in high school, I was 14 years old and wearing a size 10. And so I was like, oh gosh, how do I can't wear the low rise Frankie B jeans, if anyone's listening and remember the Frankie B low rise jeans. Lord, I hope we burn them all. But I can't wear these styles. So I, you know, when I, my mom would take me to Bloomingdale's or whatever to get clothing, my options were always more limited. And that made me feel less than. And I've always loved clothes. I've loved fashion. And so feeling limited in a plus size body by the fashion industry, there was always a sense of shame there. But gosh, where we've come now in 2020, the brands that are doing inclusive sizing, it's unbelievable. And it's so exciting. I mean, J. Crew has up to a size 24.
Wow.
Now, we've got people like Reese Witherspoon's company, Draper James, going up to a size 26 or 3X. We have Eloquy, that is a exclusive plus size clothing brand that goes all the way up to a size 30, I think, in some styles. And it's cute. So I think we have a long way to go as far as size inclusivity, especially in the designer realm. But just the fact that there are so many options now really helped me embrace my size.
Yes.
Because being in a plus size body no longer meant that I had to wear muumuus. You know? There were tailored blazers. There were tailored dresses that snatched the waist. There were things that made you feel good in your body. And that's what it's all about. It's about feeling good in your body and not about chasing a body that someone else says you should feel good only
you
have this body. Because, gosh, going back to college, and again, being in a BFA program for a musical theater degree at NYU, Tisch School of the Arts. I mean, looking at Broadway, you know, we joked. We called it Broadway shape. You don't see many plus size people on Broadway.
No, it's true.
And when you do, even if they can dance, like for me, I've danced ever since I was 3 years old. And so I was always one of the best dancers in my program. But because of my body, I never got to be featured as a dancer. My junior year, I was cast in the main stage musical. We did the Who's Tommy.
Uh-huh. Oh my God, that's my favorite show of all time.
Right? Actually starring Nick Walker as Captain.
Oh my God.
Captain Walker. And Nick Walker of Ain't Too Proud and Hamilton and all of that. Yeah. And I was the dance captain of that show. Because the choreographer was like, "Ooh, she's great." But I didn't get to be in any of the dance numbers. My track was the specialist assistant minister's wife. I call it the Alice Ripley track. That's who I was in the show. So I didn't get to dance at all. But I was the dance captain. So that is that tough thing that you have to fight as a young person graduating from college wanting to do this. And when everyone's telling you that there isn't really a place for your body on the Broadway stage, what do you do? You don't want to give up the dream.
Right.
So you go, so you're in the gym 6 days a week or 7 days a week. You're eating 1,000 calories a day. For me, this was my journey. And I thought that was normal because as the weight started to come off, I was celebrated. You know, by the faculty, by the administration, like this, yes, you're doing it. You're going to work. You're going to book. Like you get into that Broadway shape, girl, you're going to book. And so I starved myself down to the smallest I had ever been, which was about a size 6.
Wow.
Size 4, and depending on the silhouette. And Adam, I still couldn't get, I couldn't get arrested in New York City.
Wow.
Like there was, I would get callbacks, I, you know, regional theater, summer stock, all of that callbacks, but I never booked. And I had shrunken myself to be this perfect image of what quote Broadway shape was or what it was a decade ago now.
Right.
Because we're talking about 2011. That's when I graduated. And it still wasn't enough. And so you get into this constant cycle of it'll never be enough. And for me personally, you know, you start that depression cycle, right? And then the weight, because you didn't lose it healthily, the weight creeps back on. And then you're back at the start. Around 2013, again, I think I, from my smallest, I had maybe gained about like 15 or 20 pounds. Because I decided to only start going to the gym 4 days a week instead of 7 days a week.
Oh my God.
And I decided to start eating a balanced diet instead of just steaming broccoli florets in my apartment and eating a plate of just steamed broccoli florets for dinner. You know, and like that wasn't healthy. It worked. I lost the weight, but it wasn't healthy. And this, as soon as I started eating a healthy, balanced meal and lessened my gym time to 4 days a week, which I would say is still a healthy exercise,
right? Yes, definitely.
The weight started to creep back on because my body was not a healthy body at that size.
Right.
Other bodies can be. Absolutely. And that's the other thing in the body positivity work that I do. And also with a little bit of body neutrality thrown in there as well. And I can touch more on body neutrality in a little bit because it's a newer concept.
Okay.
But just the fact that one person's body is perfectly healthy at a size does not mean that that is the size that everyone's body should be healthy at.
Right, right.
It's not. And I think 10 years ago, you know, that's what was being preached. Is that it was the woman in the health magazine or the woman on the Equinox poster, you know, at Lincoln Center, that those were healthy bodies, quote.
Yeah. Do you think there was like a particular, was or was there a particular moment where you were just like, I just can't do this? Was it like a particular audition that you were just like, you know what, just forget it?
It wasn't an audition. What it was a meeting.
So I flew out to Los Angeles to visit my family and see my brother's kids and to, you know, put some feelers out about what that transition from stage acting to television acting might look like. And I scored a meeting with the head of casting at the CW, which was huge, and she was so kind and so supportive and said, "We love you. We think you're amazing. You'd be perfect for Heart of Dixie," which was a show set in the South that was on the CW at that time. And I was so excited. And she said, "But we're going to need you to lose 25 pounds. And even though I had lost all this weight, and even though I was on the lower end of the spectrum regarding my weight at this time, I wasn't surprised. Because it's something I'd heard my whole life. And I said that to her, you know, that's not the first time I've heard that, and it won't be the last time. So I understand." And then something really incredible happened. She apologized. She said, "It breaks my heart to hear you say that. And I'm sorry that I had to speak to you that way. Because I have a daughter. And if anyone ever spoke to her the way that I just spoke to you, I'd want to kill them. So I'm so sorry that you have had to hear this from me today and from clearly many other people over the course of your career, because you're so talented and you're beautiful and you're smart. But it's this business. It's just the business." And I thanked her and I said I understood. And I left that meeting and had an epiphany of sorts about a few things. The first thing was, it's never going to be enough. No matter how thin I get, there's always going to be someone telling me to be thinner. There's always going to be someone who says it's not enough. And if I keep chasing these unattainable beauty standards, I'm going to hurt myself. So I've got to stop. I've got to stop listening to these people. Especially because, and this is sort of the second aha moment from that meeting, how screwed up, pardon my French, but how screwed up is a set of beauty standards if even the person whose job it is to enforce and uphold those beauty standards knows that they're wrong and feels guilty and sorry about enforcing them. So it was in that moment that I knew it's not me. I'm not the problem. The beauty standards are the problem. These unattainable standards of beauty are the problem. So if I'm going to work in this business, I've got to find a way to do it in this body, however big it is, whatever my weight. Because if being in this business and working in this business is contingent upon constantly chasing beauty standards, it's not worth it.
But Adam, when I tell you that the second, and this is going to sound so cliche and this is going to sound like such a line, but like, I'm a woman of faith, and I believe that what is for you will come to you, regardless of extraneous circumstances. And the second I started accepting myself and stopped killing myself, and yeah, the weight came back on, but it was okay. I wasn't concerned about it. I didn't have this mentality in my head that said, "Oh, you've gained all this weight, you'll never be anything." I had gotten rid of that mindset and I booked Code of Many Colors.
Wow. It really is true. I mean, once you start learning to love yourself,
yes,
everything else falls into place.
And from there, it's just, you know, that was sort of like that 2015 area,
mm-hmm,
was when I really dedicated myself to this work and to this advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's work. Like I call it for a reason. You have to wake up every day and decide to love yourself. Because mm-hmm, of course there are things about myself when I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh gosh, okay, that role didn't used to be there. That stretch mark mm-hmm used to be there. And you sort of start thinking about it that way. But, and this is a good transition actually into body neutrality,
mm-hmm,
which I have found to be such a comfort when, because the body positivity hustle can be exhausting, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That constant, okay, yes, I'm fierce, I'm fabulous, I'm all of these things. There are some days when we wake up and we don't necessarily feel that. And instead of making ourselves feel that, instead of forcing anything, what we do is we approach our bodies with acceptance.
Mm.
It's not positivity or fabulous, fierce, sexy, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Your stretch marks or tiger stripes, your roles or whatever, but you know, whatever things we say, and all of that's wonderful,
mm-hmm,
and is important. But there are days when hyping ourselves up is sometimes more exhausting,
mm-hmm,
than just going, you know what? Yeah, do I love the way I look from that angle? Or if a photo is taken, you know, and you don't look the way in the picture you think you look in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of letting that be an earth-shattering moment, you go, you know what? Yeah, do I look great from that angle? Maybe not, but that doesn't lessen my value.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because my value is not placed in how I look.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's body neutrality.
Yes. Yes. I think one of my favorite pictures of yours is you posted on, it was like National Bikini Day, I think.
Yes.
And you posted this great picture of you in a bikini. And I loved it so much. And everything that you wrote in the description and everything that you posted the picture for what it should stand for. And like you said in the post, like, why can't I wear a bikini? Why shouldn't I be able to wear a bikini? And it is so true. And it's like one of my all-time favorite pictures of yours.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And another thing, especially in this time of quarantine, I mean, we're in a global pandemic,
mm-hmm,
and diet culture is rearing its ugly head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because every other ad on social media is pushing diet products, because the natural thing that happens when you've been closed up in your house, only able to go to the grocery store once a week, if at all, if you're in a mm-hmm high-risk home, and or you're getting food delivered and things, you're going to put on weight. You're not mm-hmm able to go to a gym. And if you don't have a home gym,
mm-hmm,
you're having to just make do to move your body however you can move your body.
Yes.
Feel good. And so everyone's priorities have shifted during this time.
Let's take one more quick break. And when we come back, let's play a game and do some rapid fire questions. And then I'll end with my famous question, just to lighten things up a little bit. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Mary Lane Haskell. And now we're back. So let's play a game that I have called Good Golly, It's Dolly.
I love it already.
So in this game, I'm going to list a Dolly Parton song, and you are going to tell me the first thought or memory that comes into your head about that song. The first song is going to be The Seeker, because that was the first Dolly Parton song I ever heard you sing.
Yes. It's, Childhood is the first thing that comes to mind. That song was on a cassette tape, a mixtape that she made for my father. She called it his happy tape.
Oh my God.
And he would play it in the car all the time. And that's the first time I heard it. And then when Dolly and I would get together, she'd sing it and we'd sing it together.
Aww.
Player guitar, player nails, and we'd sing it together. So that is a song that is very near and dear to my heart. So good.
I love that. The next one is Down from Dover.
Heartstrings.
Yes.
I got to play a part in the Down from Dover episode on Dolly Parton's Heartstrings, which was a Netflix series that came out. And it is just such an incredible story and a beautiful story. And the fact that it was never released in the United States as a single because it was about an out-of-wedlock pregnancy and the airwaves in the United States wouldn't play it. I think it's such a crime. For that reason, not a whole lot of people know that song. So if you're listening to us talk about Down from Dover going, who is she? Go on your Spotify or your Apple Music or whatever you listen to and listen to Down from Dover. It's just the most haunting, beautiful story.
Yes. It's on her Little Sparrow album and it's the 3-disc set. I think it's called It's Dolly.
Oh my gosh. You're an encyclopedia.
I mean, she's one of my top 5 favorite artists. So
of course.
Here You Come Again.
Oh my gosh. One of my favorite lyrics in all of Dolly's canon. Here You Come Again, looking better than a body has a right to.
Yes.
Like, oh, that is such a sexy lyric.
Yes.
It's so true. Like when you see somebody, especially if it's an ex, I'll never forget like reuniting with an ex and just he looked so good. And I'm like, no, you're not supposed to look good. You're supposed to look horrible. But I can feel better, but looking better than a body had a right to. So I feel that. I feel that deeply.
Yes. I love that line. Of course, I Will Always Love You.
Oh, gosh. I mean, iconic, beautiful song. But what I love about that is the story that proves what a good businesswoman she is and what a brilliant businesswoman she is, in that Elvis Presley wanted it.
Yes.
And she wouldn't sign away the publishing. And he wouldn't take it unless he had publishing rights.
Right.
And so that deal went away and everybody around her was like, what are you thinking? Elvis, that would have made your career. You would have been set for life. And she said, not if I had given away the publishing. And so she sat on it and she waited. And then Whitney came around.
Yep.
And wanted the song and allowed Dolly to keep the publishing. And as Dolly says, 9 to 5 put some money in the bank, but I Will Always Love You bought the bank.
That's right. Yes. Oh my God. And what Whitney did with that song,
my gosh, it's extraordinary.
It's
different. I feel like what Elvis would have done with it would have been too similar.
Yes.
What Dolly did with it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so I feel like those two renditions might have canceled each other out.
Yes.
Whereas both Whitney and Dolly's are iconic in their own way.
Yes. I mean, like Dolly said, it was already a number one hit for her.
Exactly.
So, you know, and then Whitney, I mean, just took it to a completely different level.
Right.
And I love listening to both versions because they are so different. And I mean, Whitney has that powerhouse vocal and I love that.
Versions and all that. Yeah.
Yes. And I do love that Dolly has re-recorded that song over the years, and every time she records it, it's just slightly different. I mean, she has it as a duet with Vince Gill.
Yes. Slightly different take. She's always using new energy and new inspiration into her music.
Yes.
And it's such a testament to how her music is so timeless.
Exactly. The last song in this game is I Just Might from 9 to 5, the musical.
Yes. Well, as far as a memory, I got to be with Dolly in London at the premiere of 9 to 5 on the West End.
Oh my God.
So, I love that show. And I think it did not get its due on Broadway. No.
Well, that's the whole game. You did a very good job.
I love it. Play it forever.
Yes. I mean, and there's a catalog of music that I could keep going forever. I just listened this morning to a Dolly Parton album that I hadn't heard yet, called Bubbling Over. It's on Spotify from her. I mean, it's from like the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I love her whole catalog, but it's so great to hear that style of music, especially at that time.
Oh, sure.
It's so great. It's so great. Well, let's do a few rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
Favorite scent or smell?
Oh gosh, like in life or like a perfume?
I'm going to let you take it however direction you want.
Okay. In life, freshly baked chocolate chip cookies.
Yes. And since you mentioned it, what would be your favorite perfume?
Angel.
Thierry
Mugler.
I love it. Favorite lipstick color?
MAC Ruby Woo.
Favorite cereal?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Honey.
Yes. Favorite game?
Like board game?
This one's going to be board game, and then precursor, the next one's going to be game show.
Oh, gosh, game show. Okay. Well, board game, I think it would have to be a toss-up between Clue and Risk.
Ooh, yes. Yeah. I have not had anybody mention Risk, and I used to love Risk growing up. I mean, I love Clue, too.
But the Haskell fam gets brutal playing.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Well with us.
Are you a Golden Girls fan?
I am.
Well, they have Golden Girls Clue, which I have.
Yes, I've seen that.
So much fun.
And then I also just recently, for my nephews, who are here with me right now, bought Harry Potter Clue.
Oh, I love it.
Hogwarts, and it's so cool.
Oh, my God. I love that. And favorite game show?
Game show. Gosh, I think I would have to say Family Feud.
Yes.
Because I just love the dynamics of the families. And like watching if someone gets something wrong and then how they interact with each other or how they celebrate when someone gets something right.
Yes.
So not only is it a fun game show, but just watching the family interactions is always so fun.
I love that. We need a special Family Feud episode of the Haskells versus the Partons.
Oh, gosh. That would be a mess.
That would be incredible to watch. So if the producers of Family Feud are listening, get that going. And your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, my gosh. There are several, but lately I've been sticking with Sin Wagon by the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a crowd pleaser.
Yes. And your go-to emoji when texting?
Oh, gosh. Normally it's prayer hands.
Uh-huh.
Prayer hands. But recently there's been a lot of face palming. face palm with everything in the news.
Yes. Lots oh, my of God, yes.
So face palming and prayer hands.
I love it. And that's all the rapid fire questions. So we are already at the end of the interview, and I'm going to end with my famous question, which is playing off of the title of my podcast, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So if you could bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you have not told previously, what would you share with me today?
Oh, wow. I feel like I would say, we touched on so much of it with the
body
positivity work, but just to expand upon that a little further, I focus specifically in our conversation about career, but to expand a little bit on love life, you know, one of the many reasons that I would starve myself and shrink myself was because I thought that that's what men wanted. You know, how many times that I would be dating someone or hoping to date someone, and next thing I knew, they were with someone half my size. And just that burden and that baggage that I carried, that I would never find love and I would never be loved by someone until I fit this ideal. That for me was always unattainable. And that's just not true. It's just not true. Because any person who only loves you for that, for your body, being a certain size, they don't really love you.
No, that is definitely 100% true.
And for me, I would rather be alone and just like the fierce aunt to my babies.
Yes.
Than to force my body into a shape that would appeal to a man who when eventually when my body fails, because it do, all bodies do, you know, skin sags, boobs sag, like life happens. And if all that was appealing about me to that man was my body, when that eventually faded to find myself in a more shallow relationship, I'd rather be alone than find myself in that position.
Yes.
And there's certain power in that for me.
Definitely. Definitely. Because also then the men that you attract will be ones that are going to love you for you,
exactly.
Because you already know that you're not going to accept anything less than that. You know, this is who I am, and you're going to love me for me.
Exactly.
It goes back to, which I mentioned in the previous interview, Dolly's song, Just the Way I Am.
Yep.
This is just the way I am.
Mm-hmm. And hey, take it or leave it.
That's right. That's right.
But I hope you take it.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, this has been such a wonderful, wonderful continued conversation.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm glad we were able to touch on everything we missed last time.
Yes, me too. Me too. Now, let's just remind everybody where you can be found on social media so everybody can follow you.
I am on Twitter and Instagram at Mary Lane Haskell.
Great. Well, everybody subscribe to her social media because you will love her postings, and you'll get to see all this great body positivity and body, what's the new term?
Body neutrality.
Body neutrality work that Mary Lane does.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's had him. Adam lives for the business of show. Call me Adam.com.